we skinny-shanked, undernourished, badly-toothed British boys got to remake a shattered world. You're welcome. So what were we pythons, we who were once so young and who are now so not? Were we friends, comrades, co-workers, teammates, gang members, rivals, siblings, brothers, brothers-in-law, or brothers-in-arms? I noticed we had become legends quite a while ago. We used to be icons, and before that stars, and before that celebrities, and before that merely TV comedians, but the Reaper keeps on reaping, and you go up a notch each time until you finally end up as myths, which is when you know you're dead. When I first noticed we'd become legends, I decided to keep a diary, in which I wrestled with the intimate problems of being a legend. The Diary of a Legend. Monday. Got up, was a legend, had breakfast, went back to bed. Tuesday. Got up, still a legend, fed dog, went back to bed. Wednesday. Exhausted from being a legend, stayed in bed. Thursday. Wife said, "You're not a legend, you're just a lazy old bastard." Friday. Decided to look for new wife. Saturday. Remembered John Cleese. Changed mind about looking for new wife. Cheaper to stay with the old one. Sunday. Tired of being a legend. It's exhausting. I looked in the bathroom mirror and it appears fame has gone to my ass. Monday. Somebody in the pub said, "You're not a legend. You're not even funny anymore. So piss off back to America." Tuesday. Pissed off back to America. They sent me back. Wednesday. I've decided to stop writing a diary about being a legend, as I'm becoming the sort of person I would normally try and avoid. I've decided instead to become a national treasure. Thursday. They said, "Fuck off. We have far too many national treasures. In fact, the UK is now National Treasure Island." So I'm not sure what we are. Perhaps we're collectibles. Survivors of the 60s? British cultural icons? I don't know. We've even become a stamp. I pay taxes in three countries and I can vote in none of them. I wasn't even allowed to vote against Brexit. The Russians had more say than I did. And of course I can't vote in the States, though they coined the phrase "no taxation without representation." I was once coming home through LAX when a steely-eyed immigration officer peered suspiciously at me. "How long have you been a green card holder?" "Oh, I've had it for ages," I said, "more than 20 years.
"Then why aren't you an American?"
Oh, well. I hesitated. What should I say? What was the correct thing to say? "Because, sir, I am an Englishman, born and raised in England under the bombs of Hitler, a member of one of its most prestigious universities, from a college founded in 1347, a man who watched England win the World Cup at Wembley in 1966, and Manchester United lift the European trophy in 1968. An Englishman, a proud Elizabethan, heir to the traditions of Shakespeare, Chaucer, Wilde, Wordsworth, Coleridge and Dickens. A cricket-loving survivor of the 60s and a member of one of the most admired comedy groups in the world. Is it not enough I live in your fair country and pay my taxes? Now you wish me to put my hand on my heart and pledge allegiance to a self-righteous, lying, tax-avoiding moron and his racist, gay-bashing, environmentally dangerous, greedy bastard, science-denying cronies who reject evolution and the rights of women and plunder the planet for profit to please their powerful funders, stealing the very air and clean water of their children while tweeting insanely and lying through their teeth on propaganda TV channels that would have shamed Joseph Goebbels? No, sir. The French do not shrug at me sardonically and ask me why I'm not French. The Norwegians do not stop me on their shores and insist I wear thick knitwear and a large red anorak and retire into the countryside, suffering from Ibsen and ennui. The Australians don't force me into baggy swim pants to stand on planks in orange sunscreen, hurtling across their shark-infested waters, singing Advance Australia Fair? No, sir. Enough, sir. I am a taxpayer, a member of your academy, a Grammy winner, a Tony winner, a father of an American, a lover of America, married to an American wife with an American child, but not, sir, an American." Did I say any of that?
Are you kidding me? I fear all authority. Good question, I replied. But in spite of all temptations to belong to other nations, he remains an Englishman. I used to think those words of W.S. Gilbert pretty much described me. But of course, the more I return to the UK, the less I recognize it. In my lifetime, it has changed beyond all recognition, particularly now it has become Brexit through the gift shop. I feel like an old John le Carré character returning to a circus that has changed irrevocably. I think, after all, I'm happiest being a foreigner. Perhaps there should be a Homo sapiens passport. I feel less and less connected to individual states and more connected to human beings. Coming out of a Grammy Music Cares tribute to Paul McCartney, an evening I had found extremely moving and uplifting, I bumped into Smokey Robinson. "That was so great," I said. "It made me proud to be white." "Me too," he said. Last year, they tried to put Python in a museum. We were approached by London's Victoria and Albert Museum, who wanted to mount a big 6-month retrospective exhibition to celebrate 50 years of Monty Python. I warned the guys. "Turn it down," I said. "Look at the others. Bowie dead, Balenciaga dead, Alexander McQueen dead, Pink Floyd almost dead. It's not telling you anything. Run away now." But they wouldn't listen to me. "It's an honour," they said, which in England means no money. We should have been warned. The V&A immediately turned down our proposed title, Monty Python, The Same Old Bollocks. That title was very Python, in-your-face aggressive modesty, but they wouldn't accept it. We were polite and suggested another, Monty Python Exposed. But no, they weren't having that either. "What's this? 50 years later, and we're still being cut by the establishment?" Instead, they told us they were going to call it From Dali to Dead Parrots. And it became clear they were doing an exhibition on surrealism and the so-called roots of our work. Pretentious nonsense. We're nothing to do with Dali or Duchamp. For me, Python has always been about comedy. That is the art. The Footlights motto is Ars est calari artem. The art lies in concealing the art. A fine observation about performing. If you take us seriously, you miss the joke, even though we were always deadly serious about being funny. More important, the museum insisted they would have control and final say. So I was never prouder of Python than when we all said no. The museum couldn't believe it. Happily, we stuck to our guns. We're still a very gnarly gang, unclubbable. I like that. So, no museum for us in the future, but certainly a mausoleum. Even if we don't all join Terry J. in an old jokes home before then. Dear sweet Jonesy, he came to a Python meeting in October 2017 and sat quietly as we discussed business. At one point he yelled, "No, no, no!" And we all turned to look at his anxious face. But it was clear it was about the water he was being offered. Actually, when he says no, he means yes, said Michael, seriously. We dissolved into laughter. The meeting had turned into a Python sketch. Terry joined us for lunch, where he sat happily drinking red wine amidst the banter. Laughter is still the best revenge. One day the sun will die. One day the galaxy will die. One day the entire universe will die. I'm not feeling too good myself. So, what have I learned over my long and weird life? Well, firstly, that there are two kinds of people, and I don't much care for either of them. Secondly, when faced with a difficult choice, either way is often best. Thirdly, always leave a party when people begin to play the bongos. Now I just wait for the inevitable question, didn't you used to be Eric Idle? That and the delicious irony that I get to sing my own song at my own funeral. I have prepared some last words. Well, you can't be too careful, can you? In the 80s, when I was still comparatively young, a man sitting next to me in the Groucho Club said, "Oh, that's funny, seeing you here. I'm just writing your obituary." What? I checked for vital signs. My wallet was still there. My dick was still there. My wife was still there. "So far as I can tell," I said, "I'm not dead yet." The young man explained that he was working for the Daily Telegraph, and his job was to write obituaries of celebrities so that they would be ready to print at the drop of a hat. In that case, I said, perhaps you'd like to know my last words. Indeed, he would.
Say no more, I said.
He liked that. It's best to be prepared, and that does take care of the final words problem. Supposing you're having an off day and you can't think of anything funny, and you say something fatuous like, pass the Kleenex, that would be embarrassing. And my song goes on. I sang it at a Pembroke College fundraiser in Cambridge in 2017, and they very kindly rewarded me with an honorary fellowship, which touched and moved me more than I can say. I sang it to the survivors of the England football team who won the World Cup 50 years before, back in 1966, when I had stood on the terraces at Wembley Stadium with Bill Oddie. I sang it at my daughter's graduation, where I was commencement speaker, and Whitman College generously gave me an honorary degree. I've let Exit International use it, and to the dismay of my wife and manager, I've turned down several large sums of money from advertisers to license it. So you will know I'm either finally dead or destitute when you hear it on a car commercial. Not that I want to go, of course. I'll be like the rest of you, clinging on desperately and screaming for more morphine. Though I did want it to say on my tombstone, I'd like a second opinion. My funeral song will go on and on, though obviously we don't. Dust to dust is about right. We dissipate into the carbon atoms we came from. Technically, reincarnation is sort of correct. We get reassembled into other things. I'd like to be reassembled into a Tesla, so my wife can still drive me. I was born in the same place as my mother, and I wonder if I'll die there, which would mean our home in L.A. To be precise, in our guest room, but that's now become my wife's shoe closet. I think I wouldn't mind dying in there amongst the Jimmy Choos. I worship the ground she walks on anyway, so that would be appropriate. She, who sadly knows me best, thinks my last words will probably be, fuck off. But that doesn't look good on a tombstone, so instead, I would like on my grave, Eric Idle, see Google.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, a Sorta Biography, written and read by Eric Idle. This program was produced by Matt Bainbridge for Redwood Studios with Strathmore Publishing. Text copyright 2018 by Rutland California Weekend, Inc. Production copyright 2018 Orion Publishing Group, Ltd. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.